Hey, are you here? Yes, you are. You are here, and we're certain of it. You're tuned into the Paul Leslie Hour. What other evidence do we need? You know, we Americans find ourselves living in an extraordinary time. One person who may agree with that assessment is today's guest, Lynn Patton. Lynn Patton is a senior advisor to the 45th President of the United States. That would be Donald John Trump. Ms. Patton was also listed among Newsmax's most influential black Republicans. We're honored to have her visit the Paul Leslie Hour. And real quick, ladies and gentlemen, if you like this interview, please consider sharing it or posting it wherever you can. Oh, and won't you please subscribe to Paul Leslie's YouTube channel? And ding, ding, ring that bell. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let us start this episode. Yes, let's listen together.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our great pleasure to welcome this woman. She has come highly recommended. Lynn Patton is a senior advisor to the 45th president, Donald J. Trump. She has a lot of accomplishments, a lot of stories, and I must say, one of the best backgrounds I've seen in a long time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Paul. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So it's a very exciting world that you're in, and there's things coming from two sides, the way I look at it. People who really, really love the 45th president. And then there's, on the other side, these court cases and a media that is just giving constant exposure to this. What is the mood like on the campaign?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. You know, I think it goes without saying that most of your viewers know that the more they attack my boss, the more he fights back. So this has truly driven sort of the narrative and momentum of the campaign for the past year or so, ever since they indicted him for the first case that you're seeing now, Alvin Bragg in New York. But, you know, he will never stop fighting for this country. He'll never stop fighting for his family. He'll never stop fighting in defense of his name. And he'll never stop fighting for what he knows is right. And what we're seeing play out today in a Manhattan courtroom, no matter how salacious and tantalizing they try to make it sound, it has nothing to do with hush money. In fact, he already won that case. Your viewers, I'm sure, remember that Stormy Daniels was told to even pay his legal fees when she lost the defamation case against him. She herself has also said multiple times there never even was an affair. So what you're seeing play out in a courtroom today is, despite what the media wants to call it, it's not a hush money case. It's actually, for lack of a better description, a bookkeeping entry case that never before in the history of American jurisprudence has been a felony charge. The state of New York literally changed the law to make it a felony. They also changed the law to bring the case in the first place because the statute of limitations had expired. So they changed that. And, you know, this was also known as the zombie case among the halls of the DA's office in New York City, because the previous Bragg's predecessor, Cy Vance, refused to bring charges for this crime, quote unquote. The Southern District of New York also refused to bring charges. The FEC also refused to bring charges. And in fact, Bragg himself refused to bring charges over something so minuscule when he first came to office, which prompted a lot of prosecutors in his office to resign in disgust, and a lot of biased prosecutors, I should say, to resign in disgust. But as we are seeing play out, it's just the American people know better. They're not falling for it. They know that life was better with Trump. They were richer with Trump. They were safer with Trump. And as a country, we were stronger with Trump. And that's the priority of the American voter.
Well put. Ms. Patton, you have had some very interesting vantage points in your life. Right now, being a senior advisor, but then before that, everything from your experience with the administration, and then before that, the organization. I saw you called it one time on Twitter, Trump World. Could you share with us maybe a personal anecdote to tell us, what is that world like?
So I've had the privilege, quite frankly, and honor of being in Trump World since, I believe, 2008, maybe even 2007, when I first met Eric Trump through mutual friends. I was going to interview to be director of his charity for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And it's funny because looking back, we now realize that our mutual friends kind of lied to us. He was actually looking for a personal assistant for him, his sister, and brother. And I was coming to interview for director of his charity. So our friends told both of us that we were interviewing for the exact opposite. And so it wasn't until like halfway through lunch that I realized Eric thought I was there to be his personal assistant. And then he realized I was there to be director of his charity. And so I always laugh now because I say, you really got me good, because Eric was like, look, you're fantastic. You have the job running my charity. He goes, but do you mind still doing some like personal assistant stuff on the side while we continue to interview candidates for this job? And I was like, sure, no problem. And he's like, don't worry. You know, my sister, brother, and I, we scan all our own stuff. We answer our own phone. We did, like, you'll never have to get us coffee and like none of that stuff. And I was like, well, whatever, you know, it's as long as you keep interviewing, you know, that's fine. And then, you know, I look up and 3 years later, I'm still like wearing both hats. So I always joke, you got me good, Eric, you got me good. But yeah, I mean, over the years, it's going on 16 years now. The family, particularly his kids, have become my best friend. Laura, Kimberly Goldfoyle, I count among two of my best friends. The boys are like brothers to me. Ivanka as well. She's fantastic. I just spoke to her the other day. You know, they really embraced me as part of their own, inviting, you know, I've been everywhere from the birthday parties, to the bridal showers, to the weddings, to the baby showers, to the hospital births, to funerals. It runs the gamut. I'm always there. And they've been there for me. You know, I would have to say that one of the biggest things that happened in Trump World was that they actually staged an intervention for me, Paul, in about 2011. I had relapsed while I was working with them due to a friend of mine, you know, who had given me the number to a cocaine sort of delivery service in Manhattan. And that was a drug that I had dabbled with in high school, college. I never thought it was a big deal because I only did it socially, like maybe once every blue moon. But, you know, once you have the phone number for something that makes it much more convenient to access, it was very difficult to control. And, you know, I thought, again, I still had a grasp of things because I was showing up to work. I was doing a very high pressure job and I was executing it well. I never missed a bill payment. I never missed a family commitment. You know, when you convince yourself that you're a functioning addict, it can be a slippery slope. And so, you know, I'm sure a lot of your viewers either have direct knowledge of substance abuse or have somebody in their family or friends or coworkers who suffered from this. And fortunately for me, somebody at the Trump Organization knew that I was doing this and it was getting to a point of excess. And they told Eric Trump. And, you know, I'll never forget because they actually came to my birthday party the night before, all of them. knowing full well already that I was lying to them and abusing this drug. And then the next morning when I walked into work, Eric called me into his office and, you know, really confronted me and said, you know, I know what you're doing and you're better than this. And, you know, we want to help you. And Paul, like a typical addict, I denied. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Whoever said this to you is mistaken. You know, I'm fine. This is ridiculous. And then he started crying. And, you know, and then I just, the waterworks started flowing. And I just was like, wow, you know, you're right. I need help. Turns out, you know, my parents were on the phone. His wife, well, girlfriend at the time, Laura Trump, was on the phone. And then the next day, his brother and sister also, you know, told me they loved me. And it was quite emotional. So, you know, woo. Paul, you had me crying early this morning. But what I will say is, you know, I don't think it's extreme for me to specifically say I think they saved my life. And I'll tell you why, because maybe 3 or 4 years after that intervention, you know, fentanyl kind of hit the streets around 2015, at least in New York City. And around that time, when we were on the campaign trail for the first election, our campaign, I look at the New York Post and there's a picture of my drug dealer on the cover. And because 3 people died from fentanyl-laced cocaine in Manhattan. And so I said, you know, that could have been me for real. So, you know, it's a personal passion of mine to share that story. I told it at the RNC convention in 2016, but also just the fact that we now see fentanyl crossing the border in record numbers under Joe Biden, over 27,000 tons since he took office. Fentanyl deaths have risen by more than 94% under his administration. This is something I take very seriously. It's something the president and his family take seriously. So it's an honor to sort of fight that fight alongside of him on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you so much for sharing that story with our viewers. And
of course. But he's a racist misogynist, you know, according to the media. But he's going around saving a Black female. But, you know, what do I know?
Well, you're bringing up a very good point. A lot of people saw this image, video and picture of this young woman at my old home, Atlanta, Georgia, at the Chick-fil-A, and she wanted to hug President Trump. And then we have people like Snoop Dogg saying things like, I have nothing but respect and love for Donald Trump. It seems like there's a bit of a change going on in our society. What do you think is going on here?
There is a seismic shift, and it's scaring the heck out of Democrats, as it should. You know, number one is certainly, of course, the basic reason. Like every American, Black Americans don't want to keep spending an extra $800 to $1,000 a month for the same standard of living that they had under President Trump, because that's what it basically boils down to in terms of gas, groceries, rent, or mortgage. But also, you know, Democrats grossly underestimated the impact of that the southern border and illegal immigration would have on underserved communities. And when you have 11 million illegals coming across the southern border and, you know, traveling to these sanctuary cities that are predominantly Black and brown, you're going to have conflict. You're going to have more crime. You're going to have less jobs. You're going to have less benefits. And for, you know, American veterans and Black Americans and brown Americans to have been born here in this country and see that their cities are bending over backwards to provide free housing, free debit cards, free food, free transportation to people who, first of all, broke the law to even come here, but secondly, aren't citizens, is a slap in the face to our veterans, to our American-born citizens. And they're sick of it. You know, we're seeing across this country in Chicago and New York, you know, people actually filing lawsuits against the municipalities for being sanctuary cities. You know, it's gotten to the point where it's taken a tremendous toll. Never mind the fact that they see a party that is sending billions and billions of dollars to the Ukraine, to other foreign wars, without, again, prioritizing them. And Trump is here to say, you know, like he's been saying since day one, Black Americans and Brown Americans come first. Americans come first. You know, America first is our mantra. It will always be our mantra. We will fight to ensure that this president is reelected so he can put these communities first. And, you know, we were just saying this the other day to Politico. In most races, political races, it's one candidate versus another saying, I can deliver X, Y, Z, my opponent can't. And then the other guy says, I can deliver X, Y, Z, my opponent can't. What they can't do this time around is say that Trump can't deliver this, because he did. He delivered the strongest economy in 60 years. He delivered the lowest crime ever, the safest border in American history, the lowest border crossings ever recorded in American history. So these are accomplishments that the Biden administration can't argue Trump is incapable of delivering, because Black and Brown Americans, like every other voter, understand that he did it once. They trust him to do it again. They're confident that he can do it again. So they are feeling very comfortable voting for him, knowing that, hey, you know, I think we'd rather have mean tweets and no wars than what we're seeing now.
Well, Lynn Patton, you've been so generous with your time. It's been great to speak with you. One quick question.
Sure.
It's not easy work, whether somebody is at the very top or even the volunteers who get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to begin the day and drive off to some place and knock on doors.
Amen.
What motivates you? What is the driving force for you?
I feel like you're going to make me cry again, Paul, but
my talent.
I was saying this to somebody the other day, you know, when we were talking about what's happening with the courtrooms and the indictments. I said, you know, probably sometime in 2016, I said to Eric when we were on the road, I said, and this was when his charity was being investigated erroneously, when Trump University, all these things were being investigated. I said, you know, why wouldn't you just move the Trump organization to Florida? Just reincorporate there. You can operate freely and fairly in the free state of Florida. And this was even pre-COVID, but we knew that the laws in New York and the partisanship in New York was becoming so draconian that it was safer for the company to operate there. And I'll never forget what he said to me. And that was, you know, Lynn, we would never do that because not everybody from the Trump organization would be able to relocate there. And I've never forgotten it, because I obviously used to be one of those people. I know exactly the people that he was probably referencing that couldn't relocate because maybe they're taking care of an elderly relative, or maybe their kid is a senior in high school. But for whatever reason, that's when I realized that, you know, this family would rather be subjected to baseless, fraudulent investigations and lose millions and millions, arguably billions of dollars, than inconvenience one family that has worked for them. And that's why you see a lot of us working for them for as long as we have, you know, whether it's me, Dan Scavino, the general manager at Mar-a-Lago, his head of golf. We've all been there for 20 plus years, 10 plus years. So there's something to be said for that, you know, because one of the first things I noticed during the primary is that a lot of people who had worked for DeSantis, and it's not to say he's a bad person, but I had yet to meet somebody who had worked for him for more than a year or two. And, you know, no matter what you think of my boss as a person, no matter what you think of him as a politician, that to me symbolizes his character. There's something about this family and there's something about him that makes you want to see them succeed, that makes you want to help them. And when you know that they were able and willing to sacrifice everything to save this country, when he didn't have to do this at all, when he could be sitting on a golf course right now with his beautiful wife and about $1 billion more dollars to his name, instead he chose to come down that escalator and fight for this country. Who am I not to fight along with him?
Political interviews are rarely personal and sincere, and this has been both. I thank you so much. It was great.
Thank you.
The great actor Robert Davi, singer and actor, he said to me one time, he said, "Let me tell you who you need to interview, Paul. Lynn Patton."
You're kidding.
And here we are.
I need to text him and thank him because this was great. I appreciate you. And thank you so much. He's the best. We love Robert.
Same on this end.
Keep fighting, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Godspeed.
You know, the Paul Leslie Hour is made possible by people like you, listeners, viewers. Please go to thepaulleslie.com/support, and you'll know what to do when you're there. Thank you. Thank you, everyone who contributes. Performance of The Entertainer intro song by John Primerano. And, of course, this is your announcer speaking. See you next time on the Paul Leslie Hour.